This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's get a preview of The Guardian this week. Of course, you can hear the show Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio and get some readings from the pages of The Guardian newspaper. But producer Don Dickinson joins us now to take a look at a couple of this week's articles that jumped out to her. Hey, good morning, Don.
Good morning, Dave.
Don, let's begin in the world of free trade. From food standards to fossil fuel exports, Britain's government has agreed with Australia they could stop the UK from dealing with the climate crisis. So modern trade deals embed all manner of rules that inadvertently work to proliferate climate change. So, Don, why is the latest UK-Australia trade deal a disaster for the environment? Well, that's a loaded question.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, politicians are always saying that they want to do the best for future generations when it comes to climate change and whatnot. And Boris is one of those politicians, right? But then he goes and signs this incredibly large deal with Australia. And basically, the author Nick Dearden and also others have said that this particular trade deal contains factors that will be a disaster for the environment. It will certainly increase carbon emissions if obviously they replace food from Britain. And, you know, a lot of the food also comes from the UK, close neighbors, right? And then they're going to import all this food from a country that basically is at the opposite side of the world. So, yeah.
Like, that's something I want to pick up on here, Don, because as I look at my phone and I open up Google Maps, you can't even really keep the UK and Australia in the same window frame. You got to do a lot of scrolling to get from sort of the top of Europe down to the south of the South Pacific. So how much of this is purely a matter of distance traveled?
Well, actually, it's not just simply a matter of distance. Modern trade deals, according to the author, embed all manner of rules that inadvertently work to proliferate climate change, some bearing only a tenuous relationship to trade. Importing more industrially produced food doesn't only boost that industry in Australia, it will over time drive out small farmers in Britain who can't compete obviously with industrial farming, right? You know, you go from the small farms that are sustainable, that are trying their best to produce organic and good food for local markets. And, you know, we're always being told about this, like buy local and all the rest of it.
50-mile diet or 100-mile diet, right? Only eating something that's been produced within 100 miles of you.
Precisely, yeah. So, the public and citizens are being told this. And then the government goes ahead and makes this incredibly large deal with a country, that's obviously has to, because of its size, has large industrial farming. And that's going to affect British small farms.
So what about food standards? Because one of the criticisms of free trade deals and globalization generally is that oftentimes there are going to be standards that slip. So what about food standards? How's it going to affect food standards in Britain? And, you know, I asked that question thinking, well, you know, Australia is another one of these Commonwealth countries, right? That you would think they have their own food standards. But what are some of the concerns around food standards in this deal?
Well, you would think they have similar food standards.
Yeah, Don, when I think about Australia, the UK, Canada, New Zealand, like they're different countries. But I think about, well, we're all from a similar framework, right? Our standards would all be the same.
Yeah, well, you would. And that's the problem. It turns out that they have lower standards when it comes to hormones, right? And this is a big deal nowadays. We hear this constantly, right, about hormone-treated beef and other animals, right? And Australia's standards aren't the same as British standards. So they're saying that this trade deal will affect those standards in Britain. British farmers are quite right to be concerned about the trade deal will throw them under the bus, basically, when it comes to competition with Australia. You know, it all comes down to money, of course. And what surprised me about this article, really, is that, you know, the Americans are saying now that they're okay with the trade that they have, right? They're good, like, enough already, right? And to some degree, you know, it is increased trade from partners that are far, you know, far, far away in distance, is it particularly a good thing? Mm-hmm. Should we not be, particularly after the pandemic, we've learned a lot of lessons, should we not be benefiting our own domestic agricultural farmers?
Mm-hmm. The domestic production, generally speaking, right? Whether it's agricultural farmers, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's vaccines, right? Like, that's the huge conversation we're having in Canada in regards to vaccine production. We have to produce our own. We have to learn to do that. We have to build that economy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's there's nothing to say that we can't do it and do it well, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, British farmers, as I say, they're annoyed because they've been putting in so much effort into producing really good quality food, as have their EU partners, the French, oh my God, the French, right? And the Italians, they're very, very picky when it comes to their food, you know. Yeah, they're just amazed that this deal has gone through.
Yeah, and that was one of the concerns around Brexit, was in regards to the amount of food supplied to Britain from the EU trade pact, right? What that deal was. And now in a post-Brexit world, you have to go start cutting other trade deals with other places. And sometimes you ask the question, are you cutting a trade deal just for the sake of cutting a trade deal, to say you've cut a trade deal, right? It's an optics win, but there can be some underlying factors in there as well. Dawn, this article is so, so interesting. Again, we're always encouraging folks to make sure to tune in and listen to the full reading of the article to get a broader picture, but I always like it when you pull up those highlights for us. But Dawn, this next article is one that hits very close to home. Capitalism reshaping the property market. Yeah, no kidding. Locking younger generations out of buying somewhere to live and expecting them to be happy about it. So, and then, of course, this article is asking, how do we get here? So the article references the term corporate landlord. So how does the article define that?
Yeah, this is very, very interesting article. Ever since the last financial crisis, the 2008 absolute, you know, implosion of the financial markets, institutional investors, such as private equity companies, had been scooping up homes lost to foreclosures and reconfiguring the U.S. housing market. This, of course, started in the U.S. and now is expanding.
So when we start thinking about that practice, what does that mean for the average home buyer?
Okay, so this the author here referenced a New York Times piece that said that $60 billion worth of housing was grabbed by Wall Street. Institutional landlords didn't even exist in the single family market until 2010, and now there are, get this, 30 of them. The pandemic seems to have accelerated this corporate land grab. If you sell a house these days, okay, the buyer could, in fact, be a pension fund.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting practice that we know impacts the bidding and the market. And Dawn, listeners of this program who carefully listen know that this is happening a little bit inside the Canadian market because of a story that Mike had in the Big Business Story of the Day a couple of days ago. But I'm curious if this article takes a look at how this is impacting a place like the Canadian market.
Yes, and this, of course, is very relevant right now because that article that Mike referenced that was came out of the Globe and Mail, was a condo developer by the name of Core Developments, and it was buying up, or it says that it will be buying up $1 billion worth of single-family homes across Canada to turn into rentals, okay? Now, There's a lot of backing and forthing about this in particular case, because anytime, as you know, that, you know, corporations or funds, particularly pension funds, that want to get into something, they get into it obviously to make a buck. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it for the sake of charity.
With a lot of buying and bidding power behind them, right? That if I end up in a bidding war with a pension fund or a corporation, they're going to beat me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those circumstances where you just had to have to throw up your hands, you know, because they might very well be bidding on the house that you're bidding on. So A, to begin with, you're going to be kind of those young couples that are trying to get into market, they're going to be squeezed out. And B, when that core development company gets a hold of all this real estate, massive amounts of real estate, what exactly are they going to do? I mean, they say that they're doing it so that they can renovate these properties and have it as a rental option because of there's just, you know, no rental properties anymore, right? No reasonable. But who knows? I
mean, there's no rental properties. Let's gobble up the housing supply.
Yeah. Precisely.
You know, like doesn't that sound so counterintuitive? Listen, I know their lawyers could be listening right now and being like, Dave, that's not the position. We're going to send you a letter. But like, that's it. Like, oh, there's no rental properties. Let's buy the housing supply because that's going to solve the problem.
Oh, yeah. 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 Can I tell you a really quick
please,
funny story?
Please, Dawn, because my blood boils whenever I read these stories.
I know. One time in our area, because I live in the Don Mills core, my late husband and I we saw a house, really nice ranch bungalow and everything, and we thought, oh, this is really quite nice. It had a pool in the back.
Ooh.
And we thought, you know what? This is something we're interested in. We went in and we offered a bid, you know, for the house, right? And I remember the agent coming to us and said, well, you have been, you know, outbid, and you know you're thinking you're bidding against another young couple, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At which point the agent, I said, well, you know, we can go a little bit more, but really not much more, because you know we're just kind of you know on top of our limit here.
Mm-hmm.
And the agent said, and of course she shouldn't have even said this because it's supposed to be 100% confidential, but she said, you're not going to outbid this bidder. And I said, well, how can that be the case? And she said, well, it's Neil Young. And I said, Neil Young, the Canadian musician, Neil Young, you know? And she said, yes. And what it was that I didn't realize this, but he has a handicapped son. And he, at that point in time, so wonderfully would buy up properties that were ranch bungalows that were all on one level and with swimming pools for therapy. And he would then donate them to a charity for,
oh wow,
For family homes, for it, like a group home for children that were
with disabilities,
wheelchair bound or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And I, but it was just like, oh, okay, well, fine. Thanks very much. Goodbye. You know, because you just knew that was it.
Well, you know, Dawn, I think that tells us something. It suggests that your taste is so good, it's right up there with Neil Young. So you're in fine company. Or I should say, Neil Young is in fine company.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
Dawn, always fun catching up. Thank you for stopping by today.
Okay. Bye-bye, Dave.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.